Welcome to the Podcast Growth Show. Next level thinking on how to increase your podcast subscriber base. In this season, we've occasionally touched on our own podcast workflow. And for those of you who follow us, you realize that we often talk about podcasting as a content strategy. So as we approach the end of season one of our Podcast Growth Show, I thought it was time to zoom out and go to a big picture episode. So what I'd like to do here is to reveal our overall podcast workflow all the way from strategy to execution. And in this episode, I'll reveal all of our little tips, tricks, tools, and gear, and time savers along the way. So one segment will be about the strategy. And I think it's important for both new and existing podcasts. It's good to start with the end in mind. It's good to have clarity about our audience, as well as the value proposition that we have for our listeners, and the reason for ourselves why we're doing and enjoying podcasting in the first place. Then the planning. A lot of people just want to get started and hit the record button already. I get that. But unless you already have a few episodes under your belt yourself, you'll discover that there's actually a lot of planning involved. And especially when content strategy is something that's even remotely on your horizon, I talk to new podcasters all the time and they sort of get lost and frozen in the planning stage. So, let's discover how having a planning framework helps us retain clarity through that. Then on to execution, the actual recording of it. And, we'll talk about how we do this ourselves. This is only one of many possible ways in which podcasts can be recorded. And in no way am I suggesting that anyone should adopt our methods. It's just that there's a lot involved. It can sound a bit scary. And we ourselves tolerate a certain amount of complexity because it produces results for us. And complexity also doesn't mean that things can't be automated. So both complexity and simplicity can coexist. For us, it's the results that count. So then promotion, well, the promotional stage of it is this entire season has been about those tactics. And we already have covered some of the methodologies there. I'll keep that segment pretty short. But all right, well, let's get started with the strategy part of it. And let's talk about seasons. We like the concept of seasons a lot because it provides an amount of flexibility when thinking about the overall goals for our podcast as a business content strategy. There are a lot of advantages to having seasons. For example, do we have a solo show or an interview-based show? Do we have a co-host? Does our podcast have a theme? Would we like to try a different episode structure? Are we afraid our audience is getting tired, or are we just tired ourselves and suffering from pod fading? All of those questions sort of get addressed if you organize your podcast into seasons. And they allow us to do a number of things. They allow us to take on a sabbatical, for example, from our own show if we need to take a break. They allow us to develop a focused theme for each season, and that's beneficial. That really creates some clarity. We can switch the format of our show from one season to the next, including who's hosting or guesting, if it's a solo show, whether you have a co-host. And all of that with no surprise to our listeners because, if we plan this, we announce the end of the season and the start of the next season. So each season is a good excuse for the podcast to be relaunched and also to sort of catch up on much needed promotional activity. So seasons are, a great strategic tool to organize your podcast in the first place. Now, I know a lot of podcasters that just, barrel on producing episode after episode without ever pausing, rethinking, or changing directions or taking stock. They're machines. They push out one episode after another. There's nothing wrong with that, as long as our audience is with us on this. Other podcasters plan each season very carefully and, do something completely different and conceptualize exactly what they want to cover and who their guests will be and, what experience they want to create for their audience. Now, either way, my point really is that periodically revisiting the value proposition of your podcast is an excellent habit. So how can we do that? How do we actually, how do we actually ascertain the value proposition of our podcast and clarity around that? Well, we've developed a process for that. around branding and value proposition. It's called value proposition design. It's actually a known methodology used by startups, but it's driven by 100 or so trigger questions that just focus around getting clarity about our own audience. You know, what do they care about? You know, what are they experience? What problems do they face? What problems do we have them solve or wrestle with? And what goals or transformations can we offer them? You know, what do we help them achieve? So there's, you know, a lot of work that goes into value, you know, understanding a value proposition that have nothing to do with your own, you know, with your own self, but it's about empathy with understanding who your audience really is. Now, there are also 100 trigger questions to get us to think about how well our topics and what we talk about and what we deliver and what we offer matches up to our audience desires and needs and talks, you know, and tasks that they do and expectations. So it's, you know, finding a good fit between our value that we can bring to the table and, you know, what our audience might be expecting. So we have an online set of forms for these trigger questions and to work through these. And as people answer those questions and create this document with their value proposition in it, it becomes a really rich source of podcast themes, seasonal topics, episode titles, keywords. You know, it really lends, you know, it's not just around clarity. It also produces some really valuable output. So overall, now what I'd recommend is think of your podcast as a product with a market fit. So this clarity or your clarity around your product market fit is something that you get out of value proposition design. Another aspect of this is focusing on our overall goals, because it's important to keep those goals in mind and also periodically revisit those. Maybe we started out just wanting to have fun and get our message out there to the world, but now we're finding ourselves wanting to build a list or speak on stages or to use our podcast as a vehicle to promote something like a book launch. So these are significant shift in goals and requiring sort of a significant adjustment in the way that we utilize and market our podcast. Make sense? So the method that we use is sort of like, let's do this every 3 months or so. You know, none of this has to do with the week-to-week workflow of producing a show in the middle of a season. I'm just pointing all this out because there's an important baseline to start from. And that baseline activity, you know, we try to revisit sort of like every 3 months or so. And so I would point out sort of three things. I don't like making recommendations, but if you're about to launch a podcast, take the time to go through this value proposition design process to achieve clarity and product market fit for your show. If you've never, you know, if you're starting out, the more clarity you have around that, the easier it becomes for you to, you know, to set certain topics and to, you know, get excited about what it is that you have to present when you know that there's a good fit between what you offer and what your listeners might want or need or what you can help them with. From most podcasters, you know, I think they're pretty clear on this. But, you know, if you're struggling with it, this is a good methodology to follow. It's a framework to follow. Now, if you've already started a podcast and you never did any of this, not too late to start now and to revisit it every once in a while. And if you already have a podcast that's based on seasons, well, that's the perfect opportunity to, you know, to revisit it at the end of every season or so to think about, well, okay, you know, how did that go? And what do I want to do next time? So, all right. So when we start, you know, we basically base everything, you know, on SEO research. So when we start identifying, you know, topics and when we, you know, we're doing podcasting as a content strategy. Really, it's about podcasting or content with a purpose. You know, so that's how I think of it. So why do we base everything on SEO when it's an audio-based medium? Well, for us, it's developing a business asset with a positive ROI. Let me give you an example. For our own podcast website, we get 65% of subscribers from SEO search. And 50% of clients that I sign come from search. And our podcast itself is less than 2 months old at the time of this recording. And it's yielded 4 new clients and lots of prospects. And those didn't come from iTunes, or, you know, a launch or any visibility there. So, you know, it didn't come from referrals. It came from search. So in that a short amount of time, you know, this podcast has already been making a difference for us. So that's why we're basing it on solid SEO research. That's the reason that this is working for us. So you may, again, think that this is overkill, and that's fine. I'll just point out that's just the process we follow because it works for us, and, you know, and the results speak for ourselves. So 80% planning and doing this kind of research, and, you know, like you'll hear me talking about in this episode, probably 80% planning, 20% execution. That's normal for us. So what we do is start to just, you know, general topic research about what is, you know, what are we going to talk about in this season. So the assumption is that we've got clarity about our goals and value proposition for the audience. And at this point, we just want to identify some potential SEO opportunities, things that we could rank for and that would still lend value to the audience, and combining the two. So the goal is to be able to rank for our rank our show notes pages in the search results pages on Google and other search engines. And, you know, in order to do that, we need to avoid sort of two important pitfalls that are part really of any SEO research. Number one is if we target impossibly difficult keywords, we'd never rank on page one in Google. And, you know, because there's too much competition. And so we'd never get search results for it because we're on page 500, 200 or whatever. On the other hand, if we target obscure keywords that no one ever searches for, you know, we may rank on page one for those search for those keywords, you know, and the search results will pop up when you type that in, but nobody ever types it in. So you're not going to receive much traffic from it. So when we're talking about establishing opportunities from keyword research, I might have a little bit of an unfair advantage because I started life as an SEO. Polymesh was an SEO agency, or is an SEO agency as well. And so we've got access to some enterprise level tools and skills. But the good news is that, you know, those are, you know, ever more becoming ever more affordable. They come with training, and really podcasters out there can do the same thing and can learn how to do the same thing really easily. So, you know, during this segment, I want to do a quick demo of how we identify high opportunity keywords. We use Mangool's SEO suite, which is KW Finder and a number of other tools. And that's really a central part of our podcast workflow. And KW Finder is by far my favorite and simple to use SEO keyword research tool. We've coached a ton of bloggers and podcasters to use that to good effect. And it gets better. This keyword research tool is only one part of an entire SEO suite of tools that add the following capabilities to your podcast. So it's that keyword research portion of it that's important, but it also allows you to track your rank and progress over time. And that's super motivational when you see that, you know, a show notes episode is ranking on page two or three or one, you know, that keeps you going. It also comes with a SERP results checker, meaning such, you know, when you're looking at the search results for a particular key phrase and you understand who is ranking and why they're ranking for that and whether you can compete with them or not, you learn which keywords to pick and which ones to stay away from. So this is a fantastic suite. It's free to get started on it. And, you know, you can sort of like do some free searches like once a day. For any serious use, you'll need to sign up for their basic plan, but still it's definitely worthwhile. So let me show you a quick demo of what we do. Okay, so here we are in KW Finder, and our purpose is to find long tail keywords for our podcast with low SEO difficulty. So things we can rank for. And, you know, this is just like a demo video from their site. I kind of narrate over it. Companies called Mangools. And they've, as I mentioned, have a whole lot of tools. Now, assume for a minute that we had a coffee podcast or a barista podcast, and we want to investigate an episode for homemade coffee. That's kind of our topics. Now, you see that KW Finder instantly displays a number of keyword suggestions, and we can sort these by search volume. So here are the keywords that are getting pretty significant volume, but you can also see that the keyword difficulty score is pretty difficult for this particular keyword. And we know that for our own podcast site, you know, we might need to filter for some maximum keyword difficulty of, in this case, let's say 35. And now we're displaying keywords that, you know, that might be a better fit. And here's one that jumps out. how to make strong coffee. It's got a relatively low keyword difficulty. Still, 1,300 people a month are looking for it. And let's see, if we click on that, let's see what shows up in the right-hand panel for the search results. So here is who's ranking in the top 10. And right away, I can look at what domain authorities do these sites have, and you know, how competitive are they, how many links do they get, and what sort of authority do they have. If I want to explore, and I can click on the results, obviously, to see what they are, you know, what these folks are doing. Now, if I click on this little icon here, it'll actually show me related keywords on how to make strong coffee. So that's really useful because we can identify, you know, more keywords that are commensurate or that are like that. And so this is the kind of the process that we follow to find related keywords. We can mark the ones that we want to save and add them to a list. So I can collect a bunch of different keywords, and those lists can be exported. And that's what we then populate our own templates with, the ones that have the formula we use to identify keywords that are commensurate with our site. Next phase is converting those keywords into some episode ideas. You know, like now we might have identified 200-400 keywords, but you know, we want to now match those up with what we want to talk about in a particular season. So in our podcast workflow, once we've identified a list of keywords with potential, it's then time to take those keywords and sort of create an episode plan from them. And we use a Google Sheets planning device for that. We've got developed a template. And it also features, our template has an algorithm and a formula to address one pretty common issue that you run into. And that issue is that every site is different, meaning your podcast and someone else's. You know, every site out there has something called domain authority or an Alexa rank. And those two are indicators that indicate how likely it is that that site's content will rank on Google. And really what it means that every site needs to target keywords that are commensurate with their domain authority and their Alexa rank. So it means the same key phrase or the same keyword may not work or produce the same results for different site. So questions like, now we sometimes get questions like, which keyword should I use? Now, that's incomplete concept unless you actually bake in your own site's domain authority and Alexa rank. And that's what we've developed this formula for. Really what it means is that old and established sites have a much easier time to rank for difficult keywords, meaning keywords that get a lot of traffic and that have a lot of competition. But new site owners with low domain authority and Alexa rank need to be more circumspect and carefully choose key phrases that they can actually rank for. And that's why we use these sort of tools, because it's almost impossible to do that without a tool like KW Finder. And, you know, the formula that we've developed matches the domain authority of any site, of a podcasting site, with the keyword difficulty to target on KW Finder. So this allows us to prioritize high opportunity topics from those high opportunity keywords. And when we do that, you know, we basically use a Google Sheet to organize the output. And we map this out. We kind of map out, an episode plan. So the process we follow is to identify episode themes, like, you know, during a season, and base those and match them with that the results of that keyword research. As I mentioned earlier, by the time that we're mid-season, we usually have a range of potential topics for those seasons already to choose from. And now we take 100 or so SEO keywords and match them up to those topics. And, then it's just a matter of let's develop some concepts, some titles for each episode. So before we even incorporate relevant keywords from our list, you know, we want to have those concepts and of what we want to talk about ready. Then matching that with, so that the titles are titles that we're pretty sure the way the content will have a chance to rank on page 2, 3, or 4 of Google. Now, after we've done that and we've gotten these draft titles, we don't just go with the first draft of those titles. Now, we know that our keywords are contained in that episode title, but we go through an optimization process. And because the exact wording of the titles of your podcast episodes is more important than many podcasters realize – you can have a great episode, but if the title's not compelling, you know, people might never click through. Now, okay, you know, your subscribers might get this downloaded automatically and they're much more likely to listen. But this is about attracting new listeners and new subscribers. So just think about all the places that your episode titles will appear in the future and what role they play in your podcast workflow and the way that people consume this content. So, for example, people might see your episode title as they're scrolling through some episodes on their iPhone. You know, will they be interested enough to tap through and listen? You know, your title has a lot to do with that. People may come across your show notes and episodes as a result of a Google search, but when they do that and they look at the search results and they typed in something, you know, is your episode there a good match for what they were looking for? Is it interesting? Was it compelling enough for them to click through? You know, or on social media, your episode titles might appear, you know, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, but will it arouse people's curiosity enough to go check it out? So all this leads to sort of figuring out, well, what makes a click-worthy episode title? You know, we've got our keyword, we've got a concept, you know, like now, what do we do with that? So there are a bunch of tools out there that help. One of them is the CoSchedule Headline Optimizer. CoSchedule is a well-known social media planning and calendaring and scheduling tool, and we use that. But they also have this wonderful add-on tool baked in. It's actually free to use. And it's for designing highly converting titles for blog posts as well as for podcasts, obviously, episodes, obviously. Tool is free. You can try it out here. You know, check out a link in podcastgrowthshow.com/E9. And now, what do they do? Well, their recommendations as to what you should do with your titles or how you should optimize your titles are based on a ton of research that they did on word usage and patterns and unusual words, power words or emotional words, and also the structure and the overall length of a title. So, all right, fair warning, don't become a slave to a tool like the 10 ways to blah, 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 right? I mean, it's, you know, there are tools that we actually have in our templates, we actually have 5 or 6 tools that do the same or similar thing, but we use CoSchedule the most. But my point here is really this, is make this part of your podcast workflow. And, you know, follow this as a thinking process to formulate a range of titles. Because I guarantee you this, if you only ever formulate one title for an episode, it'll never be as good as if you go through the process of developing 7 or 10 titles. So it's just sort of a discipline of making this part of your workflow to come up with more than one. Even if you don't use, you know, like a tool like CoSchedule, Headline Optimizer, still just the fact that you produce or that you try out, you know, a number of different titles and then pick from the top 7, you know, I guarantee you that it'll improve it and it'll make it more click-worthy. So again, for us to stay organized and to put all this content, you know, we basically type that into our Google Sheet and we have a way to basically capture, you know, different title ideas and eventually, you know, land on the one that either has the best score or that we, you know, feel is going to be the best or the most successful. All right, so let's move on to episode preparation. We've finally gotten closer to actually recording something, right? All of this has been about planning. Now, our current season is a solo effort. And what we're doing is we're using StoryChief to plan our content or our episode content in the first place. If you've listened to our previous episode on how to do podcast distribution and syndication using StoryChief, you would have learned. I mean, that was in episode 8, podcastgrowthshow.com/E8. And you would have learned about StoryChief and how we use it to push out our episode nodes to 16-plus platforms that earn backlinks. So that's a big part of our SEO strategy. It's a big part of our publication process. But what I want to point out here is we also use StoryChief to develop our scripts in the first place of what we're going to talk about in each episode. Why? Well, because that writes the show notes. So, like, you know, 50% or 80% or 90% of our show notes are written by the time that we press the record button. So if you're interested in checking out StoryChief, you know, they do offer a free account. You know, check it out in the show notes. I've got a link there. So, all right. So we developed a script in StoryChief, but, you know, we still have a Google Doc for each episode as well. And that's because This is for ID3 tagging. This is like capturing the title, the description, the metadata. You know, where was it published? When is it getting? You know, it's all this surrounding information that we want to have for each episode. So we, the people that we work with, or, you know, the process that we follow ourselves, you know, adheres to that. We've got a, you know, per episode document on Google that we use. And we use Google because, you know, it's great for collaboration. Multiple people can edit at the same time. And, you know, we prepare our YouTube video metadata, like everything goes in there, you know, stuff that doesn't ever get published in the show notes, but stuff that we do need to have access to. So our own season right now, you know, is combining an audio podcast with the video tutorials and demos and more. So those of you who haven't seen that yet, you know, go, like I said, go to podcastgrowthshow.com, check out one of our episodes. But, you know, this also means that, you know, we have to prepare publishing our podcast, not just to, you know, not just to Libsyn, but also to YouTube. And these templates allow for that. The templates, I mean, on, you know, on Google Docs. So, all right, well, finally, you know, after all this planning, we were kind of ready to record something. And we follow a bit of an unusual setup for our own video recordings. We use a desktop recording tool called ScreenFlow for this. And many of you have heard of desktop recording and screen recorders like TechSmith's Camtasia, maybe. And ScreenFlow is by a company called Telestream. And, you know, these are basically, they record your desktop screen and they also record your webcam. And so many people use them for creating courses or evergreen webinar content or for just running their YouTube channel. And we've used, you know, a number of solutions for this extensively at Polymesh, but our podcast workflow, for our podcast workflow, a clear winner has emerged. ScreenFlow launched an innovation this year that I've been looking for forever. It's like I was really excited when they came out with this. What it does is it kind of automates the production, the video production process, with the ability to configure templates for the recording. So these templates place your video, you know, into an environment where there's already an existing intro, an outro, some lower thirds, some camera moves, picture-in-picture settings. And that just saves a massive amount of time. I mean, for anyone who's done video editing before, you know how hard it is, right? And so these templates, you know, we develop these for, you know, each YouTube channel that we support, and it just saves a massive amount of time. Well, if you watch our videos, you would have seen the effects that I'm talking about, you know, from the beginning and from the end of our show. But I don't edit that, you know, like this is just me pressing a button, a record button, and ScreenFlow adds all of these components, you know, these intros, the outros, the videos, the music, all of that is added automatically. All right, another aspect of the video recording part of it is you might have noticed that in my opening sequences and throughout the podcast, really, I look directly at the camera. Well, hopefully I come across as somewhat fluent in these videos, but, you know, I do have a crutch. What many of you don't realize is that I do have a mini teleprompter attached to my webcam. Again, something that I've been looking for forever. Now, this isn't a main, you know, expensive teleprompter. This is a inexpensive piece of kit. And my scripts live on an iPad that's sitting on my desk, and I can actually speed or slow down as I record, right? Like, here it is. And the actual teleprompting screen is done by my iPhone, which sits, you know, in a little device, in this teleprompter device that I'm talking about, you know, next to my webcam or, on, you know, as part of my webcam. So it's strictly a one-man operation. I can operate this myself. I don't need an assistant. You know, oftentimes with teleprompters, it's, you know, difficult to, it's a difficult setup. They go too fast. They go too slow, you know, so it's difficult to run it as a single, you know, person recording something. Well, if you're curious about this setup, you know, I do have, you know, it's a small affiliate, an affiliate link for this amazingly small and affordable teleprompting solution that I'm really excited about. So we, you know, check it out on podcastgrowthshow.com/E9. Disclaimer, you know, if you buy this on Amazon, I get a small commission at no expense to you. But I'm hoping that these tips are worth it for you. So, so that's the video part. Let's talk a little bit about the audio part. How do you get quality audio while you're recording video? Because, you know, especially the audio quality, if I'm got up and moving around. Right now I'm sitting here and I'm talking into my microphone, my high microphone. So, you know, that's a little easier scenario. But sometimes I need to be up or standing in front of a blackboard or moving around, or I'm doing an interview outdoors. And in those scenarios, you need to use a wireless microphone. So, and also when you're doing sort of like on-camera interviews. So we've purchased some and we've invested some into some Wi-Fi, into some wireless microphones that I think are the highest quality pair at a really affordable price. They come with two lavalier microphones and they sound as good as the famous Sennheisers that cost the mint. But this price is like less than half of that. The system is called the Komica CVM WM300. And, you know, they've got some add-on parts for it as well. So it's a fantastic kit to take on the road and to drive both video interviews, doing a podcast on the road, and in general, just being able to stand up and move around. So again, you know, podcastgrowshow.com/E9, there's a link for that. But if you are using the lavaliers, then all of a sudden you have a bit of an issue. And that is getting the right sound quality from these. Now, we produce our client podcasts using a professional audio platform called Adobe Audition. And, you know, many of you may already be familiar with that or even maybe using that yourselves. And, you know, with Audition, that's just a great platform. And one of my favorite things is to hear back from clients who comment that they think they sound amazing on their own podcasts that we help them produce or that we produce for them. And so that's in part because I used to be an audio engineer and develop record and produce stuff. But so I have some tricks up my sleeve to get, like, you know, a professional broadcast sound. And let me know in the comments if you'd like me to do an episode on shaping that sort of sound and how to do that for your podcast and for your guests. But, you know, I won't take all the credit. It's also because Adobe Audition comes with these professional and sophisticated tools, you know, to help you shape that sound in post-production. So far, so good. But with video, how do you do that? Things become more complicated and time-consuming. Now, you could extract the audio tracks from the video and export them and put them into Adobe Audition and treat them there and apply all the settings and then import them to the video. It's just too much work. It's, you know, it's a lot. There is a lot involved. So luckily I'm both lazy and also, you know, have some smart. So we've come up with a shortcut to get broadcast quality video sound, I mean, a sound into our videos. And what we're using is two apps by a company called Rogue Amoeba. One of them is called Loopback, and that creates sort of virtual audio devices that allow me to route the audio from this Heil microphone into pieces of software where I can do some of this modification that I want and where I can develop these profiles on the fly. That's what's special here. The second one that works in conjunction with it is called Audio Hijack from the same company, and it functions like a real-time virtual mixing console with EQ and compression and, you know, all the cool settings, noise gating, and so forth. So these two apps allow me to apply and design sound profiles in real time. So ordinarily, you can do all this to do this. If you have a mixing console, you might be okay. But, you know, usually this is done in post-production. And so for video that has sort of a broadcast-ready sound, that's what these tools are great at. The other advantage that they have is, I mentioned a moment about the wireless mics and the Heils, you know, the wireless microphones and the lavalier mics versus the Heil PR40 mic, which is, you know, got an amazing sound. So the two will always sound a little different, but I can at least try to make them sound alike. I can probably, your audio files are groaning now. I can hear that. But now I'm just saying, you know, I can try to approximate the sound and, you know, get a similar sound level, get a similar type broadcast compression, EQ settings, you know, and because every mic sounds so differently, now it allows me to prepare some settings that I can simply apply as I'm recording the video. So, that's how we try to get similar sound quality from different setups. All right, well, so now it's time, you know, we've got the video recorded and, you know, now we have a video sitting there. So it's time to extract that audio in order to upload it to Libsyn, our podcast host, and, you know, to convert that into an MP3 file. So how do you get a Libsyn-ready MP3 file from a piece of video? In that case, we use an app called Wondershare Video Converter, and that extracts a high-quality audio file from the video, lossless at that point. And in order to then apply sort of loudness standards and noise removal and, you know, voice leveling and those kinds of things that we also usually do in post-production, there's, again, a time-saver process that I want to point out here. It's a Swiss company called Auphonic. Has developed a brilliant set of audio automation tools that every podcaster ought to check out. So what we use Auphonic for is this. It automates the following steps. It establishes a noise profile from your audio file. Then it designs and applies noise reduction based on that noise profile. It does speech volume leveling. It applies industry standard loudness correction and standards for broadcast-ready files at minus 16 LUF. For the non-technical folks out there, like if you ever want to, you know, send your podcast episodes to somewhere else to be featured on a radio show, you need to pay attention to those standards and you need to make sure that you're broadcast ready and that, you know, your segment or that your audio doesn't blow out somebody's eardrums or is barely audible either, you know. So applying loudness standards to podcasting is very important. And then lastly, it actually exports the ready-to-go MP3 file. You know, and that entire automation process using Auphonic saves us about 20 minutes per episode. All right, so now we have our file sitting there. It's ready to upload and release on our podcast hosting platform. And first we have to ID3 tag. It will apply the episode titles, descriptions, and other podcast metadata that shows up on, you know, your podcatchers and listening devices and apps. And then we upload it to Libsyn and schedule it to go live. So no secrets there. This is what pretty much every podcaster does already. But the phase that comes afterwards is what we talked about in the last episode, podcastgrowthshow.com/E8, and that is the show notes syndication. So I won't go into great detail here. Just suffice it to say this. It's a critical step in our podcast workflow to distribute and syndicate our show notes to as many platforms as possible. After all, it's kind of what we're doing for our audio by syndicating it out to be available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. But, you know, content syndication with StoryChief is what we do. It's the same thing. Like, it's what an RSS feed is to your podcast audio. That's what I look at as content syndication out to as many platforms as possible, you know, via StoryChief. And because we prepare our episode scripts in StoryChief, by the time that we record the show, our show notes, you know, the thing that we're now going to publicize and push out there, they're 90% written already. So it's not that bad to actually produce the show notes. At this point, it's just a matter of like, okay, well, now we got to put in the video and we got to put in the audio into the show notes so that people can listen to it. And that's one of the reasons that we love StoryChief is that content syndication is baked in. It's podcast ready. You know, you can embed a Libsyn audio player right into it. And that allows your site visitors and, you know, to choose their own listening, their preference, their modality. Do they want to read your post? Do they want to listen to the audio? Or do they want to watch the video? You're covering all of those bases. And the last reason that we like, or not the last, but one of the other reasons that we like StoryChief so much is that it allows us to do lead capture. So whether it's email capture or, you know, lead magnets like a bonus guide or a mind map or a checklist, you know, we can embed that right in StoryChief for our show notes. And it's that central place that, you know, we prepare these show notes to go out. So at the end of the day, our show notes are scheduled to go live and to trickle out to an ever-growing list of platforms and blogs and communities and also to our own ambassador network. Again, all of these things are stuff that we talked about in the last episode, you know, podcastgrowthshow.com/E8. Go check it out there. All right. So assuming that that's all, you know, sitting there ready to go, one of the last stages is to actually now think about promoting the show on social media. And the way that we approach that is we design a half-year-long campaign for each episode. And over the years, we've tried a number of different solutions and platforms for this. And the one that I think is most relevant and innovative and works well for both podcasting and blogging, something called CoSchedule. So it allows us to design the social campaign sort of on autopilot. Now, I might be lazy, but I don't for a minute assume that engagement can be automated. This isn't about that. You know, I personally answer every retweet, questions or DMs, you know, related to our podcast. But that doesn't mean that I want to spend a lot of time on social media creating and crafting individual tweets from episodes that I recorded a half a year ago or 3 months ago. So I still am looking for, you know, ways to save time. And CoSchedule helps me do that. It's got a clever automation concept called Social Helpers. And these are content snippets that you set up once, but then produce a variety of posts. And it varies your feed and makes your feed better looking, more attractive. You're using different hashtags, different images, different messages. So it shares our episode show notes content, but it doesn't repeat the same tweet or the same image all the time. Again, this is sort of like the thing like with where there's a lot of one-time upfront effort. It takes some time to set this up initially, but then it saves a lot of time for each individual episode. So if you're interested in seeing this in more detail, let me know in the comments, because I'm thinking about making that the subject, you know, making that entire process the subject of a standalone episode. Let me know if you're interested in that and how that works, because, you know, it's lovely to see, you know, like I keep getting responses from content that, you know, that's like, you know, came from 3, 4, 5 months ago, and it's still yielding results. So I like that. And I like not having to, you know, consciously go in there and do work every day to, you know, to promote past content. Anyway, so in conclusion, I'm hoping that this was kind of like, you know, helpful, or, you know, that it got you thinking. It's again, this episode was just the process that we follow because it's producing results for us. I don't recommend it for everyone. The fact that, you know, we're producing video alongside the audio portion complicates things a bit. So if you're a new podcaster or a business, I wouldn't, you know, a business considering podcasting as a content strategy, you might well think I'm crazy and this is all a bit of overkill. So I just say, keep in mind that the lion's share of this is planning. The lion's share of it is setting up templates and designing and implementing various automation steps. And, you know, that's a one-time effort. The routine production, you know, takes up less time. And besides, it can be done by other people. You can outsource this. You know, and that's the only thing I'd say. So if you'd like to chat and explore possibilities for your own podcast workflow, feel free to leave a comment or, you know, book a time. I'm always happy to jump on a call and chat. And so until next time, signing off, this is Jürgen from the podcastgrowthshow.com. See you guys later. Thank you for listening to the Podcast Growth Show. Visit us at podcastgrowthshow.com and download your podcasting resources guide.